Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Kabbalah and Coffee. So today, we're going to spend a lot of time focused on the topic of garments, known in Hebrew as levushim. Now, this is a very, very fascinating topic in Kabbalah, because garments aren't just, of course, of the physical variety, the kind that you and I wear. Garments are a reality that pretty much everything in existence requires. Everything needs a garment. Why? So Kabbalah explains that when you look at physical garments, so there are two dimensions. The first dimension is the fact that garments conceal and cover that which is underneath it. So the first function of a garment is to conceal. At the same time, Kabbalah teaches, a garment is designed to actually reveal what is inside the garment. In other words, without the garment, and again, this is maybe something that in the physical example doesn't work as well, but certainly in the spiritual analog, it works very well. The idea that sometimes without a garment, that thing cannot be revealed. And let's give an example right away, an analogy right away that will explain this. So let's say somebody has a very lofty intellectual idea, very lofty idea. And to give over that idea in its pure form would be impossible. So if the genius or the guru that has the idea would deliver the idea as it is, in its original form, the way it exists by the teacher or the guru, the disciple, the student, wouldn't understand it at all. So what's required is to take the idea and to package it. You take the idea and you put it into a package. You put it into guys, can you close the door? Yeah, thanks. So what's required is to take the package, sorry, to take the concept, to take the idea, and to put it into a package. And that package allows for the idea to become revealed. So again, you have this idea that the garment is concealing, but at the same time, the garment is revealing. Another way to understand this, and this is an example that we brought many times before, you know, there was a recent eclipse. You can't look at the sun without sunglasses. So you have to have, or not even sunglasses, those eclipse shades, right? So you need something to conceal in order so that it becomes revealed. Otherwise, it's too big, it's too abstract. Another way to understand this in a very, very simple level, and that is that every idea, forget about a lofty idea, needs to be brought down into something more concrete. Forget that. Every idea, in order to be conveyed, it needs to be conveyed through language. Now, you might have an idea that could be conveyed through other means, but typically we convey things, feelings, ideas through language. All language is considered in Kabbalah to be a garment, a levush. It's a garment in the sense that it takes something and it covers it, and at the same time that cover is its revelation. So when you have an idea and you package it into words, those words are hiding the idea, because what you're hearing is not the idea, you're hearing the words in which is packaged the idea. Make sense? In other words, when I'm speaking, you're not hearing the idea, you're hearing words, and then you hear the words, and then you interpret what those words are saying, the meaning behind the words, and then you unpack the idea. But what you're first getting is the language, and language is not an idea, language is language. What you're hearing is sound, and letters, and words, and sentences, and paragraphs that are being articulated, but that's the outside, and what's inside is, of course, the idea. So, a garment, a levush, in Kabbalah, in Kabbalistic understanding, a levush, a garment, both conceals and reveals. And it reveals precisely because it conceals. Without the concealment, it couldn't reveal. There's no definition. To convey an idea without defining language is not to convey an idea. You cannot have an idea that makes sense in is conveyed without this type of without this type of garment that is concealing and revealing at the same time. So again, in Kabbalah, A garment is a very special thing. A lavush is a very, sure. A lavush is a very, very special thing. Yes?
You can change garments. You can change, you know, the physical.
Correct.
And you can also change the language, different accent.
Correct.
Whatever, so you don't know what's real.
Correct. So here's the amazing thing. When it comes to garments, you can totally change it. You can convey the same idea. Forget accents. You can convey the same intellectual concept any number of ways. You can write a book that sounds like this. You can write a book that sounds like that. You can write it intellectually. You can take the concept and package it emotionally. You can make a comic. You can draw it out. You can make it into a play. You can put it into a song. There's so many different packages, garments, that you can use to convey the same idea. You can shoot a film. You can create artwork. And it's all about conveying the same core idea. So you have the same message and so many different types of garments, so much variation in the types of garments that can be used to convey the message. So that's the cool thing about garments. Kabbalah says that garments, unlike the body itself, now let's talk physically for a second, unlike the body, which can't really be changed, the garments can be changed.
Say that again?
Unlike the body, which cannot be changed, I mean, I'm not talking about surgery, I mean, but at the core, the body is the body, the garments can be changed. You can take them off, you can put them on, you can switch them out, depending on how you feel, you know, how whatever mood you're in, you'll put on this garment or that garment, whatever it is. I always say the Chabad rabbi, I mean, I wear colored shirts, but some wear only like the black and white. That's an easy closet. That's a very easy decision in the morning what to wear, right? It's like super simple. But garments, by their definition, are changeable. And it's kind of like the way we express our feelings or the way we express our ideas. We can express it in any number of different ways. You know what's interesting? Although that's true, most of us have patterns in which we express our ideas. So let me share a story that is an amazing story. So when the Lubavitcher Rebbe would speak in public, he would typically speak in Yiddish. And he would speak for many hours, punctuated by nigunim, by Hasidic tunes. So he would speak for half an hour, 45 minutes, and then he would kind of close out the talk, and then there would be song for a few minutes, and then he would pick it up and talk again, and then some more song. That was the Fabrengen. And I turn your attention to the beautiful picture over there. That long white table is the main head Fabrengen table, and the Rebbe is sitting. I'll point it out in the picture, although it's kind of hard to see. At least it's hard for me to see from there. The Rebbe would sit kind of in the middle of the table, which in this picture is over here. And then people were gathered around. The synagogue went also this way, and people would sit there and listen. If it was a weekday Fabrengen, there would be a few microphones, and everything was recorded. It was broadcast on satellite TV, and there were simultaneous translations and all that stuff. It was very, very high tech. I mean, in the later years, not in the original. So, but everything that was said in the weekday was recorded, and we pretty much have most of that. But all of the Shabbat and holiday talks couldn't be recorded. You can't record. You know, we don't do the recordings on Shabbat and holidays. So how do you remember what the Rebbe said? People wanted to remember, you know, these ideas. So there was a team of individuals called Chozrim, which means literally repeaters. But we might call them human tape recorders, although tape recording is kind of old school phraseology. But that was the era, or human reel to reel. You know, they memorized these entire talks. So, and a bunch of different ones. They had a team. There was a head, the head Choser, the head reviewer. And if you look at the picture, you see he has a front row seat. He's like kind of sitting right there. But they would remember, they would commit to memory the Rebbe's talks. And then after Shabbat or after the holiday, they would begin the process of reviewing it amongst themselves and then writing it down. And they would write down, to the best of their ability, a transcript called, in Hebrew, hanacha, transcript, of what the Rebbe had said. And then sometimes they would give it to the Rebbe to review and to edit to publish, and sometimes it just remained in transcript form. And it might remain in transcript form for years until a time came, you know, maybe 20 years later when they said, hey, let's publish that talk from 20 years ago. We have the transcript. Let's work on it, edit it, send it into the Rebbe to edit, and let's put it out there. So it happened that there was a talk that it did not have a... It may have had a recording, may not have had a recording. I don't remember what the original was like. It might have been a transcript from a recording, which makes it, you know, very accurate, or maybe it was by memory, which makes it fairly accurate. Either way, the editorial team, the Rebbe also, when the Rebbe's insights were published, the Rebbe didn't want it published the way he said it. Because if you take a transcript of a speech, anyone's speech, it's not the same as when you write a book. You don't speak the same way that you write. Right? It's a different type of communication. So the Rebbe told his editorial team that you don't have to feel like you have to stick so closely to the original when you publish. Like, work it over, and you know, if you have to move stuff around and whatever, make it, you know, write it the way it needs to be written. The Rebbe didn't have a lot of time to write books. All of the Rebbe's books, most of the Rebbe's books, are from the Rebbe's talks that people worked over, that he edited, whatever. So again, so just so you know the way things work, the Rebbe spoke, transcripts, they edited it, and then they kind of reworked it to make it, you know, publishable, or not publishable, but more of like a publishing style, written style. So the head of the team is—he's still alive. His name is Rabbi Yoel Kahn. He's one of the most brilliant people that I've ever met. So he had the job not only of memorizing. He didn't only have like a memory, like a perfect memory, but in addition to that, he has an ability to understand and articulate very well. So he's a very gifted individual. So he took it upon himself, and he was in charge of this team, and he wrote one of the discourses that we've studied before at Kabbalah and Coffee. He took the original transcript and he reworked it into a book. It was a very long talk, and he added stuff and he reworked it into a book. We studied this in a previous a few years ago, maybe even not so long. I don't remember when we studied it. It's called On the Essence of Chassidus. We studied it, you know, not so long ago. Here, Sunday morning's Kabbalah and Coffee. And he reworked it. And then after a long time, after many months of working on it, he sent it in through the secretaries to the Rebbe to review and to edit, and then to send back, and then it would be published. Well, it sat by the Rebbe for a while, and it didn't come back. So he asked the secretaries. They said they would check. They never got back to him. He never saw it. A few years later, the Rebbe sent out word saying he wants this talk published. So he said to the secretaries, okay, but I sent it in. Can you find out where that draft is? He took the manuscript, the raw manuscript, and he reworked it into this whole thing. Can you find that, and then we can get that moving? They said, we can't find it. So he went back to the manuscript and reworked the whole thing. But here's the crazy thing. Years later, they found the original. Do you understand what I'm saying? Identical. That's what I'm saying. Aside from like three or four words, dozens of pages. Aside from three or four words, Rabbi Yoel Kahn, who prepared it, he prepared it twice. He sent it in once. He never saw that one again. So a few years later, he did it again. A few years later, he did it again. They found the original years later, more dozens of years later. Decades later, and they were virtually identical, aside from a word here or there. Why do I say this? Because although you can take an idea and package it in many different ways, typically we have our way of packaging things. I have my way, you have your way. When you communicate, when I communicate, we typically fall on the same patterns of communication. Like, he has a way of thinking, his way of thinking, is when he has a concept to Rabbi Kahn, when he has a concept to deliver, he's got his way. So it's not that surprising, although it's kind of amazing, but it's also not surprising that although there were like 2 or 3 or 4 years in between the drafts, they were basically identical. A garment is used to conceal, but also to reveal. You cannot reveal without, in Kabbalistic understanding, you can't reveal anything without a garment. It's almost like, if you want to look at it on a spiritual level, the soul in this world, the soul can't do anything in this world without a garment of the body. The soul can't function. The soul can't do a mitzvah. The soul can't talk. The soul can't sing. The soul can't dance. The soul can't walk. The soul can't... A soul cannot take a coin and give it to someone in need without the body. In other words, you need a garment to reveal. You cannot function, you cannot do, you cannot reveal without the garment. The same thing is true with spiritual light. Spiritual light is so lofty, it cannot exist in a revealed way in this world without a garment. And so Kabbalah says that all of the good things that we do, in addition to being mitzvot, good deeds, they form a garment, if you will, to house the spiritual energy that is born of our actions. So not only do our actions, positive actions, stir a spiritual energy, but it actually creates a garment in which that energy can become materialized in this world. It's almost like packaging. It's almost like packaging. Some things cannot exist without packaging. Think of a banana. How would it grow without packaging, without a peel? Right? It would disintegrate. It would be all mushy. I don't know. I don't know what it would be. It just wouldn't be, right? You need the packaging to preserve what's inside and to make it accessible. Without the packaging, certain things cannot be accessible. Now, packaging can also go in a very different direction. Packaging can obscure what's inside, and it can hide what's inside or distort what's inside. You can put packaging on something and present it as something that it's not. You know, you can say, you can market something as something completely different. Don't worry about it, as something completely different than what it actually is. No worries. So packaging or a garment can be very misleading. But we're not talking about misleading garments right now. We're talking about garments that are revelatory in nature. A thing oftentimes needs a garment in order to be revealed. So let's actually jump inside the text. This is chapter 5 of our book. My goal today is actually to go to the end, to finish the book. I think we can do it. This is page 64, chapter 5. And the top caption, or the header, is the need for garments.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Short question.
Sure.
I heard a contradiction, so I'm sure I misheard it, and that was when you said if you have a coin, you must have a body.
Correct.
To give the coin. But prior to that, everything seemed to be that you had to have a garment over the body in order for it to function. So you would be saying then that the body, the skin, is actually a garment.
Yes. In other words, yeah. Great question. So you have this idea existing on multiple dimensions. Relative to the body, the garments, our clothing is the garment. Relative to the soul, the body itself is the garment. So it's all relative. In Yiddish, we would say, Sevenzich v'meret. It depends what we're talking about. If we're talking about the body, so that's the inside, and the clothes are on the outside. If we're talking about the soul, the soul's on the inside, and the body itself is on the outside. Okay. Now, I'll give you one other example of garments. So it says in Kabbalah that the soul has three dimensions of garments. Thought, speech, and action. We have our youngest Kabbalist here.
I know, I saw
Esther.
Beautiful.
She's
what a surprise.
I know, right? How old is she now? She's less than 4 weeks.
4 weeks.
To the day? Mazel tov. It's her 4 week anniversary.
Starting off her life on the right foot, having to Kabbalah class.
See that? By the way, it says in the Talmud that there was a great sage that they said the reason why he became so great is that his mother brought him to the academy of Torah study when he was a baby. So she would go there, she would bring him, and because of that, he absorbed all this wisdom and information. So she's off to she's definitely off to the right start with
she
Torah study. See that? See that? She's already reporting back what she's learned.
Well, you guys will see her after Pesach.
Lots of nachas.
Usher, happy Passover.
Happy Passover.
Yes.
So Kabbalah says that the soul has three garments. Forget the body for a second. The soul has another set of garments. And this is actually very important. Thought, speech, and action. There's what you know, and then there's what you're thinking about at the moment. Two different things. Think about all of the information that you know. It's a lot of information. But then think about what you're thinking about right now in the present, and that's not everything, that's something specific. So you're thinking about, I don't know, what are you thinking about? You're thinking about Passover and matzah. Let's say the thought is matzah. How crunchy that is. Okay, that's the thought. You know so many things. You know mathematics, you know science, you know literature, you know history, you know family history, you know yourself, you know people, you know so many things. And what are you thinking about though in the moment? You're thinking about crunchy matzah. Okay, so that thought is a garment for the soul. In other words, the soul has ideas, but they're not yet revealed. Or sorry, not yet, but in the moment they're not being revealed. What's being revealed? The thought about matzah. That's called a garment because a garment doesn't only conceal and define, but it also reveals. So it reveals this thought of matzah to yourself inside your mind. Speech is another garment that reveals the idea to someone else. So if you're thinking about matzah, and then you tell someone, hey, I'm thinking about matzah and how crunchy it is. What do you say about matzah? Do you like matzah? Let's say that's the conversation, right? So you've taken your idea, one idea, you've thought about it, and now you're speaking about it. And then if you go ahead and buy matzah, so you're acting on your thought and your words. So these three things, thought, speech, and action, are considered to be garments of the soul. One is internal. Thought is an internal garment where it's being revealed to yourself. Speech and action are external garments where it's being revealed to the world at large outside, to someone else or to the world of action. So let's jump in page 64, where it says the need for garments. Want a copy? You got Yasha Koach for the cleaning.
Oh, pleasure.
Couldn't have done it without you. You found any like rolls inside of any challah?
You don't
want to
know.
Oh, wow. It's that bad. Okay, chapter 5, the need for garments. It is known that tzedakah, giving charity, is called his garment. It's called God's garment. As stated, his garment is tzedakah. Levusho tzedakah. This is actually from the High Holiday Prayers. We talk about God, and we say, praising God, God is this and God is that, and we say, God's garment, levusho, his garment is tzedakah, is charity. And that the Torah, we also know that the Torah is also called his garment. As it is written, he enwraps himself with light as with a garment. So there's a verse from Psalms.
So, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
You can have more than one garment?
Yeah. So, that's exactly what he's saying. What he's saying is, in Jewish literature, we find, in Scripture, we find tzedakah being referred to as God's garment, and Torah study. So he's gonna ask the question, why does God have multiple garments? And he's going to say they exist on different levels. He's going to address your thought exactly in just a moment. But again, the source texts tell us that tzedakah is God's garment and Torah is God's garment. How do we know Torah is God's garment? It says he enwraps himself with light as with a garment. What is light? It says, ote, or, kasama. He wraps himself with or, with light, like a garment. What is light? Or is Torah. Ora is Torah. Light is always synonymous with Torah. So when it says he enwraps himself with light as with a garment, it means he enwraps himself with Torah as with a garment. And therefore we have now two sources that talk about various divine garments, one being tzedakah and one being Torah study. And so he explains. Now, there are inner garments and outer garments. Let's do footnote 117. Footnote 117 on page 65. Garments serve a dual purpose, concealing the individual who is wearing them, and at the same time, as tools of expression. Chassidus describes the powers of thought and speech as garments, since they are the medium through which the soul expresses itself. Thought is an inner garment expressing a person's emotions and ideas within himself, while speech is an outer garment through which one's thoughts are revealed to others. There's actually a book, Garments of the Soul, that is referenced here. Employing the metaphor of an inner and outer garment, the discourse, our text, explains that both Torah and tzedakah are garments through which the divine light is revealed. Torah is an inner garment revealing the divine light in the world of Atzilut, while tzedakah is an outer garment revealing the divine light in the lower worlds of Berea, Yetzirah, and Asiya. We're going to explain this right now. There are various spiritual dimensions. Kabbalah speaks of four different realities. The world of Atzilut, which is the world of emanation, the world of Bria, which is the world of creation, the world of Yetzirah, which is the world of formation, and the world of Asiya, which is the world of action. We exist in this lowest world of action, in the lowest component of this lowest world, because it too has two components, a spiritual and a physical component. We live in the physical component of the world of action. Now, when we talk about the process of revelation, typically things become revealed in a slow process, in a methodical step-by-step process. First, they become revealed to us, and then they become revealed to someone else. Again, think about the thought and speech process. First, you become aware of your ideas and your feelings. You articulate it to yourself through your thought. Your thought, and everyone thinks, most people think in language, right? You think in your native language. You think, if you're a native English speaker, typically you'll be thinking in English. And others will be thinking in different languages. That's the way it works. So here's the idea. Thought is when you articulate this idea or feeling to yourself. You think it through. You mull it over. And you begin putting words and definition and revelation to this thing for yourself. And then you can share it with someone else. So first you have to articulate it to yourself, that's thought, and then you can articulate it through your words and your power of speech to someone else.
There's an intermediate thing in there too, that between thought and choosing how you're going to speak.
Right. So that in the thought process itself, there's a tzimtzum, there's a contraction, there's a forming, there's a moderating, right? There's a process, you're absolutely right, in which we edit.
Hopefully.
We edit what we're thinking, right? And reveal only what we've thought about and defined. So you're right, our thoughts can be much broader than what we speak. But in general, thought is revelation to self, and speech is revelation to others. So thought is inward revelation, and speech is outward revelation. Thought is how the idea is shining for myself, and speech is how the idea is shining now for someone else. Inside, outside. Didn't Wook write a book called Inside, Outside? What was his book called?
Who?
Herman. Herman. Book. He wrote Inside, Outside. Was it Inside? Is he? It's a Kanahara. It's amazing. All right, so getting back to this, we'll leave literary references aside. Inside, outside, same thing exists in the spiritual reality. There's revelation to the inside and revelation to the outside. There is a garment that reveals divine light to the inner worlds. In other words, the world of emanation, Atzilut, which is considered to be a spiritual dimension. It's called a world, but it's not a reality outside of God. It gets a little bit tricky to define this. Atzilut, the world of emanation, is not yet the world of creation. Creation implies something that's new. It's created. Emanation describes something that is still connected very closely to its source. So the world of emanation is still a world in which it's close to God. The world of creation already is a world that's now a little bit separate from God, although nothing is totally separate from God, but at least we say that the world of Bria, Yetzir, and Asir, these lowest three worlds are a little bit outside, if you will, or separated from God. Again, not in an absolute sense, but in an apparent sense, the way we see it. Whereas the world of Atzilut, the world of emanation, is still close to God. So the way divine light becomes revealed is in a methodical, step-by-step process, like the way we reveal our ideas. First, it becomes revealed in thought inside. Then it becomes revealed in speech outside. First, the light becomes revealed to the world of Atzilut, which is on the inside. That's like thought. And then it becomes revealed to the worlds of Bia, Bet, Yud, Ayin, Bria, Yetzira, and Asiya, the lower three worlds, through this idea of almost like the outer garment, like the garment of speech. And so he says, this is why we have two garments. We have the garment of Torah and the garment of Tzedakah. The garment of Torah is the inner garment that reveals the light to the world of Atzilut. And the garment of Tzedakah, giving charity, is the garment that allows the light to come down here. But you need to have both. Just like you can't speak before you think, well, you could, but then it's dangerous. Just like if you want to effectively convey a message to someone else, you need to have both components and it has to be in the right order. You need to think and articulate, and as Cece mentioned, you have to organize your thoughts and know what you're saying and what you're leaving out. Right? So you have to have all of that thought worked out first, and then you can speak and deliver it. So too with divine light. For divine light to go from all the way at the top to all the way down here, if we want a revelation of divine light, it requires a step-by-step process. First, the garment of thought, and then the garment of speech. First, the inner garment, then the outer garment. First, God's own inner garment to process it, and then it should be revealed through that speech garment to us. One is Torah, and one is tzedakah. In other words, we affect the garment. We create the garment through our actions. So when we study Torah, we create the garment that the light will be enveloped in for the world of Atzilut. And when we give charity, tzedakah, we create the garment. We wrap the light in a garment that now can come into our physical reality. Well, through the lower three worlds until it hits us. Make sense? I know it's a lofty concept, but conceptually, hopefully structurally, it makes sense. You need to wrap the light in something tangible. First something not so tangible, and then something more tangible. So first Torah study, and then charity. You need both. If you just have the Torah study, then your light is going to stay stuck in Atzilut. It's like the idea is going to remain in the mind. It's not going to be ever expressed. And if you only have tzedakah, charity giving, then you're only speaking without thinking. And then what are you getting? maybe not the right thing. So you need both. You need the Torah study and you need the tzedakah. And then the light progresses in the orderly fashion. So let's read this inside. Once again, third paragraph. The Torah is the inner garment. The light of the blessed Ein Sof. That's the infinite light. Ein Sof means without end. It means infinite. The light of the blessed Ein Sof, the infinite light, effuses and vests in the world of Atzilut only through the Torah. In other words, it only becomes... Light is pure infinite light. Is not... It's so beyond definition, we can't even say that it's revealed in Atzilut, because revelation requires a garment. Remember, something that's pure without any garmenting, without any clothing, it doesn't have revelation. So if we want it to have revelation, it needs a garment. So that's what he's saying. The garment in the world of Atzilut, the inner garment in the world of Atzilut, of the infinite light, is only through Torah, which stems from Chachmah, divine wisdom, for the light of the blessed Ein Sof vests in Atzilut only through Chachmah. If you want the light of God to shine in a revealed way, not in an infinite way, in a revealed way, inside the world of Atzilut, it requires Chachmah, wisdom, which is Torah. Let's continue. Tzedakah, on the other hand, is the outer garment, which clothes the chasadim, divine kindness, with malchut, divine action, revealing them and enabling them to sustain the lower worlds of Berea, Yetzira, and Asiya. Again, this is couched in very Kabbalistic terms. This is not being explained at all right now in a... the way he's writing this is not a way in a way that's explaining it in a very logical, methodical way. He's kind of just putting it out there in the original language. But hopefully this kind of makes sense based on the preamble here. You have an idea on a human level. You have an idea that you want to articulate. You want to relate to someone else. First, you have to process it in your mind. And then you can process it through your power of communication in your mouth. The same thing is true with the infinite light. The infinite light begins infinite. It's so infinite, it can't be revealed. Revelation means that it's packaged to be revealed. It's got to have some sort of definition for their revelation. Otherwise, it's too infinite even to be revealed. But the way it works is that first you have the revelation on an inner level, on a level of thought, which is Torah. And then you have on an outer level another garment that leads to revelation, which is tzedakah.
Why wouldn't it be mitzvah?
Why tzedakah? That's a great question. So on a simple level, the verse that we have that refers to God's garment is Levusho Tzedakah. It says tzedakah is the divine garment. On the other, to explain it though, it says in Kabbalah that of all of the mitzvot, tzedakah is on one level the greatest or the most... Let's leave the adjectives aside. What's significant about tzedakah? Tzedakah is the product of blood, sweat, and tears. It's the product of your education, your schooling, your work, your time, your effort, your energy. All of that goes into the money that you earn. Think about it. When a person goes to work, they're drawing on their education. They're drawing on their upbringing. They're drawing on the work that they're doing. They're drawing on their wisdom, their emotion. They're drawing, and then the physical exertion that they put in every single day in work. And that is converted, all of that energy and effort and wisdom and emotion, all of that is converted into cash. And then you take that cash and you give it to tzedakah. You give it to a good cause. You give it to someone who's in need. It's an amazing thing. You're basically giving your soul, you're giving your, I don't mean soul like spirit versus, you're giving yourself, you're converting yourself into a gift to someone else. No other mitzvah draws on such depth. Lighting Shabbat candles, take a match, you light a Shabbat candle. I'm not minimizing it, I'm just saying it's...
But it's more for yourself.
Which one?
The lighting of Shabbat candles. There's right.
But it's also, the way the author explains in Tanya is the investment in tzedakah, your investment in tzedakah is greater than any other mitzvah. You're not invested in any other mitzvah as much as you are in the money that you've earned and are now giving away. There's nothing else that you invest as much in as in the money that you earn. I mean, typically. So that's why of all the mitzvot that we can, the truth is, in general, it says that every mitzvah is a garment. But if we want to look what is the ultimate garment of the light, it's tzedakah, because it's on one level the ultimate mitzvah. Now let's continue. This is last paragraph 64. This is why tzedakah is compared to armor. The Talmud says that the coins that you give, the tzedakah coins that you give, form a coat of armor. You know how armor is made of different links? Right? Armor is made of scales almost. So imagine every coin that you've given. Right? I don't know about plastic and credit card transactions. I don't know how that would work. But maybe that provides also some sort of, you know, rectangular armor. But all the, certainly back in the day, they had coins. They gave coins. The coins were form a shield of armor. Why? For it protects the divine energy. Unbelievable. For it protects the divine energy from the chitzonim, from the negative forces found in the lower worlds of Bria, Yetzirah, and Asiya. Listen to this. It says, not only does the garment deliver the core light, the infinite light, through this progression of worlds until it hits us, not only is that what the garment does, but it also shields it from the outside. In my banana analogy, remember my banana analogy? That the peel of the banana protects the banana from... If there was no peel on the banana, it would never end up in your kitchen. It would have been mushed way before it reached you. It needs the protective shell or shield or peel to keep it intact. And he says the same thing is true with the light. On the level of light, the light would be misappropriated, tumbling through the lower three worlds, certainly into our world. This pure light would be misappropriated if it didn't have this garment. The garment does multiple things. The garment makes sure that it's defined, it allows it to become revealed, and it protects it from unwanted forces that might otherwise try to grab the light. Chitzonim. This is a Kabbalistic concept of other forces, negative forces. In Atzilut, however, 66, there resides no evil. Protection is therefore unnecessary. So the garment of Torah only reveals. The garment of tzedakah also protects. You with me? Since the outer garment of tzedakah is needed for the light to come into the lower worlds, in which now there is the reality of evil. Evil exists in the lower worlds, and evil could attach itself and try to siphon off the light. Therefore, the garment of tzedakah is a garment that protects the light from this leeching off of, from this sucking the light into a negative place. Now, let's continue. It is known, and here he gets very practical, and it's unbelievable. It is known that the flow of divine energy from above to below must proceed in an orderly, sequential manner. This is what I said before. If we want to speak and articulate, we first have to think, and then we speak. The same thing is true with divine light. First, it has to start off being revealed in the highest worlds, and then it has to go progressively lower. Therefore, the infinite divine energy, must first flow into the inner garment of Torah. Thus, our sages say, for he has scorned the word of God. This refers to one who is able to study Torah but does not do so. Let's continue. Then, in order for this flow of divine energy to be revealed below, it must continue through his outer garment, tzedakah. In other words, what he's saying is, on a daily basis, to get this, to access this flow of divine energy in our lives, we create the garment for ourselves. The first thing we do is study Torah and then give tzedakah. You with me? First thing we do is actions that create the garment for the higher world, the inner garment for the world of Atzilut. And then we do something that creates the lower garment for the worlds of Bria, Yetzirah, and Asiya. So what we're doing is we're basically creating garments to bring down the light that we can access on a daily basis. So every day, the implication and what he's going to say is that every day we should be studying some Torah and then giving some tzedakah, but in that order. Why? Because that's the way the light needs to progress below. So to bring down the light below, first study some Torah, do a little meditation and study, and then take a coin, take a penny, doesn't matter how much it is, take a nickel and put it in a charity box. And you are channeling the divine energy, not only channeling, but you're also garbing and revealing it in the correct way. Let's continue. Now, look what he says. Now, the Torah is also a garment, which we've said, albeit an inner garment for the transcendent levels. Therefore, in order for the divine light which transcends Chachma, the wisdom of Torah, because we're talking about the infinite light, in order for the divine light to be vested in this garment through Torah study, it must be preceded by a Ru'uta Deliba with all one's might during the recitation of the Shema and prayer. And this is what he's saying. Torah study and tzedakah is a garment that the infinite light can become revealed through. But what pulls it down? You have to create almost a vacuum force. Think about when you draw, you know, you're drawing blood, you have to create that negative pressure to pull the light below. So first thing you need to do, forget the garments, you have to put something in the garments. So Torah and tzedakah is a garment. But what are you putting in the garment? The light. But how are you schlepping the light? Through Torah, Torah is giving you the garment. It's not schlepping the light. You with me on this? Torah and tzedakah is providing the garment, the vehicle of revelation. But how do you pull it down? What causes that pull? So he says that is caused through prayer. So now we have three things to do. Prayer, Torah study, and tzedakah. That is the magic trifecta. So that's what he says here. How do you draw down? What creates that force to pull down the light? That is the Bechol Me'odecha, that is the with all one's might, turning to God with all one's passion and excitement, that is expressed and recited in the Shema and Tefillah and the prayer. This is achieved by reciting the Shema and its blessings, as well as the Pesukei de Zimra with intense concentration. So when a person prays with concentration, when a person really communicates in this dialogue, communicates with God in prayer, that pulls the light. And then when a person study some Torah right after, they garb the light in the inner garment. And then when they give tzedakah, they garb the light in the outer garment. 1, 2, 3. Let's continue. In this way, the Ruta Deliba is awakened from below, which awakens the Ein Sof on high, since no thought can apprehend him other than through a Ruta Deliba. When a person prays and gets, and their heart becomes inspired, that inspires the divine heart, if you will. In other words, the heart reflects the heart. So our love and passion reflects God's love and passion. And then that triggers the light to be, that pulls the light below, and then we put into the garments. It is after this initial awakening through prayer that Torah study elicits the divine light into this inner garment. Thus the verse states, you shall speak of them, v'dibarta bam. The Hebrew word for you shall speak, v'dibarta, is etymologically related to yadber, which is an expression of leading and eliciting 68. The subsequent elicitation of divine light to the lower worlds is then achieved through tzedakah. So again, the process is prayer. Prayer, not just saying words. He says prayer is about your heart becoming inspired. So if it's just reading words on a page, that's not the definition of prayer. Prayer, by definition, is ru'uta deliba, which is an expression and a passion of the heart. So first you have prayer, passionate prayer. Then you, and that draws the light. That creates that negative force, that negative energy in a good way. The negative energy is positive, by the way. That creates the pull, the vacuum, to pull the light. Then you have the Torah study, which draws this light that's already being pulled into a garment that reveals the light to the world of Atzilut. And then you give tzedakah, and that draws the light all the way down and reveals it. We can now understand the verse in Isaiah that says, our righteous deeds are like a repulsive garment. Such a bizarre phrase, right? It says in Isaiah, our righteous... So yeah, go ahead.
What if you don't know how to pray?
Prayer can happen in any language and in any format. Prayer means you open up and you speak to God.
You do not have to go to...
Sure. Correct.
Thanks.
Correct. Now, if a person can, it's ideal to pray with, you know, the... there's safety in numbers. I'm kidding, not safety, but there's power in numbers. And it's beautiful when there's a context that evokes that type of spirit. But it's not about a social scene, and it's not about catching up on the week's news, and it's not... Prayer in synagogue is meant to be more conducive to that feeling. But a person can also experience that at home. There's no problem praying at home, and there's no problem praying in one's own language. Praying is, at its core, about opening up and communicating with God. Maimonides says that the biblical mitzvah of prayer is not to recite the liturgy. The biblical mitzvah of prayer is to ask God when you need something. So when you need something, you say, God, this is what I need. This is what I want. This is what I require. This is what I'm thinking about. That is the biblical definition of prayer. Now, let's continue. We can now understand the verse in Isaiah that says, quote, our righteous deeds are like a repulsive garment, from which the Talmud infers that each and every coin adds up to a large sum. What does that mean? So let's jump in. When prayer and Torah study, the ru'uta deliba and inner garment are lacking, that tzedakah is unable to achieve its goal, God forbid. Look what he says. If we're not praying and studying Torah, in other words, if we don't draw the light and then couch the atzilut light in that inner garment, then when we give tzedakah, what are we doing? You with me? You're not pulling light because you didn't start. It's like speaking before thinking. Or speaking before waking up. The first thing you have to do is wake up the light. And that happens through prayer. And then you have to couch it in the garment of Torah. And then you can give tzedakah. So he's saying tzedakah is so powerful, but you can't start with tzedakah. Tzedakah is the last part of a process that's an inner process. So again, when prayer and Torah study are lacking, the tzedakah is unable to achieve its goal, chas v'shalom, God forbid. This is because, as explained earlier, the divine effusion, the process of the divine light flowing, must proceed in a sequential order. First, one needs to put effort into prayer with all one's might. Contemplating the greatness of God for an extended period, thus generating a rooted liba. You have to move your heart in prayer, and that requires some effort. This is the main element of the awakening from below. That pulls the light. Subsequently, Torah study elicits this light into the inner garments, achieving the desired result in the world of Atzilut. Then, the last part of this, through the act of tzedakah numerous times, each and every coin adds up to a large sum and reveals the supernal chesed, supernal kindnesses here below in all manners, matters of good, both spiritually as well as materially. And the act of tzedakah shall be peace, and the service of tzedakah tranquility and safety until eternity, and let us say, amen. And that's how the discourse ends, with a blessing that through our tzedakah we should create peace, tranquility, and safety forever. But again, the core point of chapter 5, it's a very simple point, but his core point is, tzedakah achieves amazing things, but it's really the end, the last step of a three-step process. Number one, meaningful prayer, meditation, contemplating God, thinking about God, and speaking with God. That's number one. Number two is some Torah study. And number three is some charity giving. When we do all three, we pull the light, we have the inner garment, and we have the outer garment, and our lives are filled with peace, tranquility, etc. We all want peace and tranquility. We live in a world of anxiety, in a world of anxiousness, in a world of sadness and depression, and fear and hate, and all of this stuff. All we want, not all we want, but amongst the things that we want, peace, tranquility for us and for others, inside and outside. And what he's saying here is tzedakah is an incredibly powerful mitzvah that can generate these deeply desired gifts. So let's take this message as a call, you know, as marching orders. Let's pray, let's study, and let's give.
So if you don't pray and you count to the first two, does that make tzedakah irrelevant?
So it's I want to balance this by saying, I don't know if it's irrelevant. But what he's saying here is that it's not packing the full punch that it could. God forbid to say that any mitzvah, even on its own, is irrelevant. I would never. I don't think that's what he's intending. I think what he's intending to say is the real power is when we have the full flow in its sequence, in its order. So listen, let's not discount any mitzvah. And every mitzvah can be a stepping stone to another one, even out of sequence. Like, a person can give tzedakah and then get inspired to study Torah, and then get inspired to pray, and then you line it up. So, not, God forbid to discount any positive action. At the same time, let's recognize the power in this order, and the power of drawing the light, studying the Torah, and then giving the tzedakah. Let our lives be filled with light, and let's share this light with others. Thank you very much for joining me for Kabbalah and Coffee and for the art of giving.